IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 79 of the Killing It, podcast. I'm Carl, and joining me today, as always, are Dave and Ryan. So how are you guys hanging out there?
We are doing well, and we are continuing to plow ahead, right? I'm still remote from my remote location in Michigan State, and having a fantastic time up here. We're enjoying the fact that the leaves are actually starting to change, and you can see them from everywhere, and you don't have to actually get in your car and go do a drive to get to the fall season. So I am enjoying the daylights out of that stuff. So
they haven't talked you into doing the drive. You got to go to the UP to see the color.
I have been told about the drive to the UP, and I do think that it would be worth it. I am a person who I'm a sucker for a good sunset and a good leaf drive and all of these vista kind of things. I'm a big believer in that stuff. I was the first one to vote to go there. I have been downgraded because there are grandchildren in car seats, and I've been re-educated about the time limits on such things. And I agree. I think it's perfectly reasonable, but I would be in a car right now going up there if my wireless connection were strong enough.
See, I've had the advantage, like, I've not gone anywhere, but I have now been proven smart with a long time ago Kickstarter investment. I bought with a solo stove when it was a Kickstarter piece.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, it showed up, and Sharon made fun of me because of me and Kickstarter. and we didn't use it all that much. But now I'm being shown to be very smart and forward thinking in that I can now have a bonfire in my back patio. Quickly, easily, smoke-free, and it was really delightful last night. We had a friend over for outdoor dinner, but I had a roaring fire going to just took the crispness off the air, and I get all of those benefits that you were describing here, right? Because September is actually like one of the best months weather-wise in the DC metro area.
Technologies for making modern life even better.
So I, sir, have made fire.
I've made fire. So I had the opportunity to raise children in Michigan and opted out because I spent, I don't know, 6 or so years there in the pre-child era of my life and saw people with children that take an hour to wrap their kids up so that they don't die in the 50 degree below zero wind chill. Yes. And I decided I'm not doing that.
So. September in Michigan, delightful. January, no thank you.
A touch less so.
I shall migrate with the birds.
Exactly. Very cool. Well, we do have a sponsor today. We always want to thank our sponsors. The MSP event of the year is back. This time it's virtual and free to attend. SureWeb's Accelerate 2020 offers a comprehensive online program to help you gear up for the future of managed services. Industry experts will deliver thought leadership sessions and hands-on workshops on sales, marketing, financials, strategic business planning, and customer engagement. Also available will be one-on-one meetings and fun virtual networking. Want to stay relevant in a disrupted world? Join us from anywhere on October 21st and 22nd. Registration is open at accelerate.sureweb.com. Topic number one today, we're going to talk about, this is an interesting, sort of almost a follow-up article. Last year, some of you may know that there was a raid on the dark web. Well, the follow-up of that is that a lot of bad guys were recently arrested. It's quite amazing, 179 arrested in a global web takedown that basically came out of the investigation that's been going on since May of 2019. And it's interesting because there's really this world that most of us never see. When we talk about the dark web, it's kind of scary, right? That these people are moving billions of dollars worth of drugs and weapons, and they're well-armed and well-funded. It did strike me a little odd. I'm trying to look at the article. The amount of money that they collected was a few million. I'm like, wait, you didn't get any of the money, basically, right? Because a few million in this world is essentially nothing. But it is interesting to see that the agencies, FBI and other agencies, are taking this very, very seriously. So it might be invisible to you and me, but it's not invisible.
So I'll tell a fun story, because obviously I mentioned I live in the DC metro area, which means you do often have the times where these little worlds do collide. I have a friend, and I will not name or give enough identifiable information because this is the problem, right? But I have a friend whose job involves security clearance and has access to secure network, very secure networks, and does a lot of that, you know, top secret and higher stuff. So most of the time does not speak about his work. But occasionally, conversations will come up where he has an opportunity to go, oh, yeah, I saw something on the dark web. And yeah, you guys should be terrified. He'll drop these small comments in, or, you know, oh, it's, yeah, you should worry about that. And then there's the pause. And this is exactly that. I mean, we don't talk about this portion of it enough, I think, as technologists, from the side of thinking about the other side of what's going on. Again, I've been railing recently on the whole way we talk about security in these abstract terms that are technical. The idea of, let's talk about an attack, let's talk about an incident, versus actually talking about the crime that has happened, where a law has been breached, an intrusion has happened. There is a criminal on the other side. There is a human on the other side. There is a human victim. My big takeaway for channel people, and I'm going to keep beating on this, is you need to talk about this in human terms, not in technical terms. This is important, by the way. Ryan will probably go, do this all the time, please. But it's the, because if you're talking about it in technical terms, you actually are doing yourself a massive disservice because you're abstracting all of the impact of it. Where if you talk about it in human terms, you are really relating it to the customer on their terms. But more importantly, these are actually illegal criminal acts. If we are talking about them and responding to them just in a technical sense, we are leaving out the law enforcement portion of this that is important to the investigation, the prosecution. Insurance companies will care about those components. And so your takeaway is to look at these and remember that anytime there is an incident like this, you are dealing with a crime, not just a business thing, but a crime, and you have to respond appropriately.
Steve, one of my foundational principles of selling and human persuasion is that fear does not produce positive or proactive changes. Fear produces negative and reactive. We retract from the thing we fear. We do not press forward to solve it. I believe that our industry uses far too much FUD as a sales principle because we believe that the boogeyman will frighten people into spending money. It's essentially incorrect, right? Human psychology dictates that when you are afraid, you do not make new and proactive decisions. You will only retract to the things that you already know, a safe place, if you will, right? My principle has always been describing FUD if you succeed, right? Like if you actually, in a big, scary, noisy world, if you know, for the chance this time around, you actually scare somebody, the reaction will be what I refer to as turtling. Right, where we go, whoop, we pull all of our exploratory ideas back and we only will do the things that we know are true, which in a business where we sell emerging technologies is maybe the least logical sales technique that I can possibly imagine. I've got something brand new and I want to scare you with it. Wow, you're never going to sell me. Now, I say that because this is the exception that proves the rule. When I saw this headline go across the other day, I was like, oh my God, somebody finally is actually taking this seriously. And the reason that I say that, I've had so many conversations in the last 6 months. What can we sell during the downturn? What's actually working? Where are the hot spots in technology? And the data will back this up, and not just that, but also the logic. Security is more important now than ever. And there are more than enough case studies and situations to validate that security threats are real, and that at the end point, something we might have all assumed years ago, oh, it's all taken care of. We've got antivirus. We don't need to pay attention to this. It's not solved. The bad guys are still thinking. They're still trying. And we as an industry have not yet created a secure operating environment. Now, talk to a managed service provider. Talk to a salesperson in our industry. Are you selling endpoint security, identity protection, dark web prevention, et cetera? Oh no, people don't take that seriously. I say to them, you know, your credentials might be on the dark web, and the collective response is yawn. I cannot imagine a situation that is less appropriately appreciated for the real harm that's out there. The dark web is not kidding. Your credentials being out there. Like, Carl, you started this conversation with that essential point. The bad guys are out there, and it's not about millions of dollars. It's billions of dollars of things that are going on. And this is the killer point of it to me. In ways that are utterly preventable with today's technology. If you just freaking deploy it and do your patch updates and things.
But you almost prove my point by the way you were even speaking about it. You're using like bad guys. These are active organized criminals. Bad guys almost implies a lower level, like a lower level of just, people out there or comic book versions of them, right? The bad guys. Like it's you actually have to be really careful about the choice of the words because they're bad guys implies a level of organization that is lesser than what they actually are.
I didn't mean to underplay it because I think it's super important. The other thing is bring it down to the IT service provider. You have a very difficult job of trying to convince your clients that they should care about this or that it matters to them. But it is their data and it's their millions and billions that collectively makes all of this possible. So you might not be in the drug trade or the arms trade, but these people are really using your money for that. And so the ransomware for this and that. It doesn't just go to make them rich. It also goes to help build a completely hidden infrastructure that we are all responsible for fighting. And so I think, you know, part of this gets down to you must have an ongoing educational process with your clients. And it can't be, as Ryan said, it can't be the let's just scare them into complying because that is just stupid. I have never appreciated the stories where people get up in front of a crowd and say, you know, 60% of the companies that lose their data and go out of business, blah, blah, blah. That it's never motivated anybody to do anything, right? But you are going to lose productivity and your company is going to be investigated by an international group of police agencies if you don't do what you need to do to protect your data because you have a responsibility to protect your data. This isn't just your company. This is the entire civilized world that needs you to participate.
Absolutely. And as we have said before in previous discussions, data security is, let's reverse that. Data insecurity is a communicable disease. If you are an aggregating point for 65 or 75 customers and you do not protect theirs, well, who they do business with and who everybody else does business with is now also vulnerable. So please do your duty and let's be responsible on this.
All right. Topic two.
Excellent. So I will shift us into topic two, and this is a far less conceptual topic that we're discussing, much more tangible and based on the principles of physics. So a couple of years ago, Microsoft started with the idea of taking a data center, putting it in an enclosure and dropping it to the bottom of the ocean. They did it originally in a small case off of the coast of California. This one is a little bit larger scale implementation off the coast of Scotland, and they are now sharing with us the data about taking a data center and dunking it under the water. Now, the original premise, if you're familiar with the cost and complexity of managing airflow and temperature in a data center, right? You know, cool aisles, hot aisles, all of that stuff, right? People who are not technical professionals do not appreciate the massive effort and expense that goes into cooling these very, very hot devices that, you know, as we pack in more cores, this stuff gets extremely hot. So Microsoft said, let's put it in the bottom of the ocean and it will cool it down and that will save us money. Oh, by the way, sideline benefit that they've just come out with, the data point of the day, 1/7 the failure rate on server components inside that thing. And it's not because it was cooler. By the way, it's because it was airtight and it didn't have corrosion at all that was affecting these devices. They've not only proven their original thesis, but they've uncovered even more ideas. Guys, we often talk about the concepts of remote or non-physical computing, right? This couldn't be more physical, and I'm fascinated by the implications and the positive data points that they've drawn out of this. Your thoughts on this, right? What are you guys taking away from the data center under the sea?
Well, drop a giant pill into the water that has the Microsoft logo on it. It's kind of cool. Like, so, you know, there's the one piece that I'm curious about. I don't debate, and I'm not. I think it would probably work. Is I haven't understood the cost of building it versus the cost of an on-prem. Like they have, I've not seen a cost-benefit analysis besides the hey, this worked, and here's a whole bunch of benefits. So I think that that would. If I don't build data centers, and I would encourage most of our listeners to not build data centers. But that, but that said, I'm really interested in the fact that they are getting this creative with the idea of the way these get built, the way they get located, you know, because that's going to really matter. Learning that the corrosive element of air, okay, we knew that at some point, but this is an interesting test. What also really interested me was the way that they'd engineered the failures into it. You know, they assumed a certain level of failures, and the plan was simply to take those servers offline, not to go in and repair them. And all this is, no, that's part of the failure rate, and that we'll get those components will no longer be used because this component, you know, was only intended to be underwater for 5 years. This is the same strategy that, for example, that NASA uses when they build, you know, pieces that go into space, because you're not really going up to fix a lot of that.
Right.
So I like the level of engineering that's being put into this because it allows us to be that much more thoughtful to the way it's done. We also, obviously, you know, I know we all know of these areas where, look, giant buildings put near people is not necessarily the way that we're going to solve this problem as we continue to need more computing power. I'm from my perspective, it's one of those bits where it's like, I'm really glad that they're doing some really interesting testing to figure out the ways this get built out and the opportunities that that opens up.
I am just intrigued with speculating about the first meeting. Hey, Bob, what do you think we should do? Oh, I think we should take 864 servers and stick them at the bottom of the ocean. Okay, Bob. All in favor, say aye, right? I mean, how did that conversation get started? And, you know, I'm glad that people are thinking way, way, way outside the box, but, you know, it's really pretty impressive. The cool thing is, so to speak, that we're going to learn and we're going to get better. This thing, when you look at it and you think about in your brain how big are 864 servers, they're bigger than this unit. So what's inside there, obviously they don't need frames around them. You know, they probably have a unified power system. You know, there's lots of things where they are making advances that will serve us well going forward in many, many areas. And Dave, you talked about space. The first thing that struck me is, so why don't we do this on the moon? And then it makes it, we're much, you know, closer to being able to have a way to support a society on other worlds if we figured out how to have the computer
power to
get there before we do.
We could just put the capsules in space. Like, they could be satellites. I mean, there's all kinds of, I mean, you don't even have to move them to the moon. You could put them in orbit. Like, there's all kinds of interesting thoughts for, you know, if you want to be real futurist to say, like, we can figure things out here that are really interesting.
So a couple of years ago, the three of us had a conversation on a different side of the planet. We were talking about the evolving boundaries of what we call the computer, right? There once was this thing where the computer was this device. It was local. It sat on my desk. And then the computer became the data center and it became the entire network. And various vendors have made very good marketing pitches around the entire internet is the computer. And, you know, writ large, that is what we mean when we say the cloud, right? I grew up in a world of limited processing capacity and cost controls on network bandwidth and storage capacity and server compute capacity. What this experiment is showing is what we used to think was cool when we could over-provision storage or we could overclock a processor and we could just say, you know, you need this much to run your application, but I'm going to give you that plus 20% and not going to charge you extra for that because, you know what, the silicon is really not that expensive. So I'm going to over-provision and allow you to design things with redundancy, with failure, with scaling inside the workloads available to you in your componentry. Well, guess what? That's now being done. We're not over-provisioning the processor in your laptop. We're over-provisioning your data center, and the cost elements of an entire server is now at this level negligible. It's like the variable expense of going from 876 servers to 1,000 is a rounding error. And that for all of us who grew up in a world where servers were expensive, we look at that and go, oh shit, that's really like, oh, that's a big change in the cost basis. But that's where we are. And I think this indicates quantum improvements in the availability of local compute power. I find this to be kind of groundbreaking.
Well, what's interesting, so think about Moore's Law. What do you expect in 2 years? Well, I expect you to double the number of servers at the bottom of the ocean, right? So it'll be very interesting to watch. And it's kind of weird to think that this is now the first step towards a future in which this is just going to be a thing, right? So it's very cool. Final word, Dave, before we move on?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing about this is that, you know, I will also just continue to push on the people that think, you know, oh, all of this you know, it's just a server, the cloud systems are just somebody else's server. It's like, well, I will challenge that thinking to go, they've given a lot of thought to that being a very different thing.
Right.
And so the idea is, so I want to break that. While I like the idea in principle, the idea of, oh, it's just a server, it's a server, it's a server. Remember, it isn't either. Like, as we move this to the idea of much more abstracted computing, the idea of a server is actually a newer, different thing, and it will mean new things, particularly even as we have technologies like serverless compute. So Don't get, you know, it's fun to say as a quip, but remember that it is actually the fundamental technology is changing.
Yeah, it's funny, going back many years. So I remember 2008 when we were pushing all of our clients to the cloud, somebody made a handwritten sign, put it on our office, and I wish I had taken a picture of it. But basically we were reselling Rackspace and somebody wrote on this sign, Rackspace has spent $7.8 billion more than we have on security. Right. And you have to just remember what Microsoft is doing. This does not compete with you putting three servers in a rack in your local data center, right? This is a different world. So,
anyway. Well, it's so funny that you, because I'll use that to say, like, the way these companies are thinking about that is my pivot to topic three. And because I'm going to say that this is, you've been using this as our life after the pandemic. This is even bigger than, like, this is life going forward into the future, and it fits because this is coming in the pandemic as well as post-pandemic. So this week, I covered two stories on the show, around the first around Microsoft and their Lighthouse product, which is essentially an MSP dashboard. It is an integrated MSP dashboard giving access to all of the various Microsoft components. They have specifically built it and named managed services providers as the target. This is a product for MSPs. I also covered this week on the show, T-Mobile are now offering Microsoft 365 and support for, by the way, Microsoft 365 for free as part of their Magenta for Business. So they are including that as part of their part of the plan, as well as beefing up their SMB-focused support services. This on top of having covered HP moving into offering managed services via subscription, Lenovo offering it. I got a trend, everybody. You got multiple data points to say these vendors are moving into it. Now, I wanted to open this up for conversation. By the time this airs, I'll have released an editorial talking about some of my perspective on this. And I'll then throw to the guys, my position on this is, yeah, inevitable. You can pout about it,
but this is just the end point of what's been continuing to happen. We used to be computer dealers, and you'd make a bunch of money on selling the hardware. Well, then the vendor took that away. And then you would go into value-added resale. Well, the vendor added, you know, but who actually repairs these computers anymore, which used to be a service that you sold. Then you moved into services. Well, they include that now with some of the services, and now they're all coming for your managed services. You can whine about it or simply recognize this is the inevitable step. Well, that's my thinking.
Clearly something that our listeners need to focus in on and take seriously and not just poo-poo. I would say there's a big difference between Microsoft moving into the RMM space and all these other people, Lenovo and HP, claiming to sell managed services. And the distinction is, if you're selling me a piece of software and I can say, well, let me lay out your piece of software and how easy it is to work with you as a company, versus other people who are selling a similar kind of software, competing software, and then take it to the service piece and say, okay, do clients actually want to and are they willing to buy interactive services from large companies? And historically, companies have always wanted to do business with businesses about their same size. And so if I personally go into somebody's office and I'm selling managed services and the back end is Microsoft or the back end is somebody else, my client doesn't care because they're interacting with me. So it's easy for somebody to compete on the software side. On the service side, here, you know, we're going to get rid of somebody that we know and like and love, and we're going to replace that with a big nameless corporation that puts us on hold every time we call. I do think that those are two different aspects of this move of big companies into managed services.
See, and I will kind of draw both of your comments together from Dave and Carl, because I believe that markets have an essential predictable trajectory, right? That when we emerge, it's not ready for prime time. Only the people that are technically proficient can participate. And then it goes to the mass market and it goes to the laggards. And then it eventually becomes a commodity, right? We're all very familiar with that bell curve of market adoption and the trends that it indicates in terms of who the end users are and what they are actually paying for, right? I will take that concept and multiply it with the limited lifespan of the technology industry writ large, right? Not just managed services, but overall in terms of IT. The difference, the essential difference in the experience that you're describing, Carl, about where I prefer a local provider and a local relationship with somebody who's about my size, the reason that I believe that's not yet changed in the technology industry is that we are younger than other industries, right? None of us is young anymore, but we are, compared to telecommunications, compared to consumer electronics, compared to industrial equipment, IT is a younger industry, and we've just not yet figured out how to aggregate things at a mass provider level, because in the world of I insist on a local provider, we all still subscribe to a very large national provider for our connectivity and carrier services right down to our cell phones, right? We are absolutely comfortable outsourcing that relationship, even with its admittedly terrible customer service.
And there's basically a line. So how the line is, how much do you want locally versus national?
Right.
Same thing. Think about in the insurance industry. Yes, I technically have an insurance representative, and yes, he actually met with me the first time and made me sign an actual piece of paper. But now I go online and I go clickety clickety click, and he may or may not actually be alive at this point. But I deal with that company because I have a certain level of comfort for that, because I don't need the personal.
Which I think is where I think this is all going. Like, I think it's actually both. Like I've said this all the time. It's like, the value of a local person, a person solving problems for me, will not go away. The trick to this is what part of the problem are they solving? Like, I'm going to want somebody to work with me and address my business needs and solve my business problems. Do I need some local person to turn the screwdriver? Nope.
don't need that. Like, don't necessarily need. And I can completely see an easy scenario where I've got somebody local that's helping me with the technology choices and which systems and how they pull together. But yeah, Microsoft runs my desktop because that person helps me coordinate things and helps me make decisions. But yeah, the guy fixing my printer, yeah, that's some smart Microsoft person who's the ninja at printers, right? Because they got the one guy that does that, because they can do at scale the level that I want.
And I'm sorry, Dave, that's the essential question. What is the job that needs to be done locally? It is not the fixing of computers. It is not the monitoring and alerting to problems with the computer. All of those things can be centralized and done remotely, as all managed service providers do. What needs to be fixed is the thinking, the planning, the strategy, right? I had a conversation with some very smart MSPs recently, and I said, what's actually selling? And they were like, believe it or not, strategy consulting, the V.
Absolutely.
Totally. That's what's selling now. Not the plumbing administration, but the thinking part. And if you're an MSP and you're not, if your business model is entirely predicated on turning wrenches, virtually speaking, you're going to become a commodity. You need to be migrating into the thinking and the integrating parts of things.
And we will revisit this because we forgot to mention Apple is also moving into this space, which we've talked about earlier. So anyway, it will be a never ending piece of what we continue to talk about going forward.
Right. But I want people to really think about this because where I worry about the gap is the thinking that you've had and continue to have versus where these companies are moving towards. I'm going to paint the picture. Microsoft controls the operating system, right? If they're now offering more monitoring, more services, those teams are going to talk to their buddies down the hall and go, hey, if you fix this thing, I won't have this problem. And we all save a pile of money. We all make more money on the service.
We totally have to bring this topic up again because that's a flashback to SBS, which failed because Microsoft's teams had a limit to how much they could work together. So,
well, fair, but by the way, that's a company from 15 years ago. The Microsoft of today is very different than the Microsoft of then because they also have this, I don't know, massive computing power that's running AI and machine learning behind it. But what I'm going to say is because I'm literally, as we're talking about it, I am poking at one of the major vendors that serves this space on their website who are still talking about hardware monitoring as one of the features and operating system monitoring as their core differentiation. That's what I want service providers to be thinking about is the people that are thinking about you and serving you are talking about things that were relevant 10 years ago when these other vendors who can control it are moving into the space.
We are out of time, but we should actually seriously consider just continuing this conversation next week.
Well, here's a pause then. For our audience, hit us up. Tell us what are the pieces that we need to dig into on our thinking of for, you know, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on social. Tell us what you think, because I think you're right. I think this is where this conversation goes.
Very good. And that will do it for episode 79 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.